anyway, hello everybody out there in music video land, and welcome to another edition of the Music Video Land podcast from your super good special friends at IMVDB, the Internet Music Video Database. My name is Adam Farron, one of the co-founders of IMVDB in sunny Durham, North Carolina, and we have down in good old Florida, Mr. Douglas Klinger, also one of the co-founders of IMVDB. Doug, how are you doing?
Super good, Adam. How are you?
Not bad, not bad. And also with us, as usual, is Mr. Adam Alexander from Fringe Music Fix, way up there in Canada. How you doing, Adam?
Excellent.
Ah, good. Nobody is bad.
Lots of positive feelings, positive vibes on this podcast. Full of positive vibes.
That's what we strive to do, and I should mention that we're recording this live on October 3rd, 2013. And if you're unfamiliar with what we do, we go ahead and record this live on Thursday night, and then we release it as audio the next morning. I'm getting better at releasing it earlier and earlier, because basically all I have to do is put our theme music at the start and then put a really awful cover of Blurred Lines at the end, and... thanks to Doug, I have a really long list of backup covers of Blurred Lines to use.
Yeah, I spent some time going through them.
Each one they're also good, you know, it's hard to find the bad ones.
Right, exactly. Every Blurred Line, it's typical that they're awesome. And I'm like, wait, this is great. This doesn't count. This dog version of Blurred Lines.
Have you ever heard the dog version of Game of Thrones?
No, is there one?
That's the best dog version of anything I've ever heard.
I'd like to hear that.
It is fantastic. It's tough. I have that Christmas album of all the cats. You ever hear that?
That's yeah.
It.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. That's a tough listen.
There was a cool Keith Schofield, Schofield. It's one of those. commercial where he did Dogs That Barked, the theme song of Star Wars.
Mm. It was under the Super Bowl one year, right?
It was a Volkswagen commercial during the Super Bowl. So, low budget thrown together.
So we're here to talk about the weekend music videos, gentlemen, and I have some bad news.
You haven't watched any of them?
Oh, no, I've watched them, trust me. The bad news is I think this is one of the weakest, if not the weakest, weekend music videos on the whole.
It's a slow week in music videos.
Slow. I would agree with slow.
Today helped it a lot, I think.
Yeah.
Today was the best day of the week.
You really had to dig this week. There was some searching. Some searching.
The two videos that we added to the IMVDB picks of this week of today were really good, but it was a slow grind. We only if you count the Arcade Fire, Here Comes the Night. Here Comes the Nighttime, which actually came out on early Sunday morning after Saturday Night Live. Including that, we only staff picked six videos this week, which is we usually do at least one or two a day, and this time around it was not quite as frequent, but
well, I think we should get in a little bit of the reason why. I mean, this is, if people aren't familiar, there are kind of, I guess, seasons, I guess, or times, just like films, you know, you release your, you know, big blockbusters during the summer, and music videos kind of go with the, you know, the ups and downs of the music industry in general and their release schedule. But I think generally speaking, the fall and the winter is usually a much more quieter time for music videos. Although there's great stuff coming out. We get weeks like this where it's a lot quieter. And yeah. I look at the top 10 and I have some bones to pick with pretty much everything in the top 10 here.
Yeah. And it's funny because, and in like number two of the top 10 is a perfect example. Like, Rihanna Pour It Up. Although it came out this week, that was shot in May and was it likely intended originally to be part of the kind of summer release of music videos. You know what I mean? It usually doesn't take 6 months for a music video to come out.
So let's talk about Pour It Up a little bit before we talk about the number one video of the week, because this one made a lot of waves, not just because of the content, but because of the whole, a little bit of the backstory. Doug, you know a little bit of what went on here. Want to tell us about it?
Sure. So this video was originally intended to be directed by Vincent Haycock, and it's being reported as creative differences between he and Rihanna that kind of led him to remove his name from the project. And now Rihanna is listed as the director of the video. And so, yeah, they shot this video back in May. I think that they're like said, there were creative differences. Now, that's kind of what whenever a director removes their name from a project or isn't happy with it or something, creative differences is kind of the blanket statement that could kind of be put over top of it. So there, any number of things could have actually gone awry during this process. Because of that, I think what we're looking at kind of, I think that the footage that we're looking at involves Vincent Haycock, and then anything beyond that, I don't think he had anything to do with the edit. And
we'll just say you know what happened. You're not going to talk about it here, but you have a pretty good idea of what happened.
I've heard stories about it, but like I can't really, I don't know the truth. I've definitely heard like some rumors about stuff that has happened that were beyond just creative differences. But yeah, since I don't know them, haven't heard them from Vincent Haycock or Rihanna directly, I'm not gonna like start rumors. But I've heard that there were issues. I did hear that, and so
it's not TMZ night tonight.
No, not quite TMZ night. Exactly.
Too bad.
But it's I know that music video directors are very passionate about their work. And definitely, like, you know, I hear frequently, you know, we do a lot of interviews on the site, and occasionally people will decline an interview because they weren't happy with how the final product turned out, and they didn't go as far as to take their name off the project. But there's definitely has been stories of kind of disagreements between artists and
directors. It's happened a lot lately.
Yeah, it's been happening. And you know, the bigger the artist too, I feel like the more likelihood of them wanting to have their influence. And I think that the likelihood of things to go wrong kind of increase too with, you know, the level of importance in a collaborator. And so it's definitely interesting. But so I think what getting to the video itself, I think that I think the footage in that video is pretty beautiful, and I think everything looks really good. And where it loses me a little bit is in the edit, personally. Like, I think it's a little messy, and it's definitely not like tightly edited like you would expect from a Vincent Haycock directed video. It seems to be a little bit messier.
Or as a Rihanna video in general, right?
Say it again.
Or a Rihanna video in general.
Right, yeah.
The like quality there's.
Yeah, it's different. Right, I mean, it's a super sexy ass video. It's got a lot of Rihanna boob in it, which I'm all for. But like, and some lots of stripper butts. But yeah,
what are you complaining about, Doug?
The video seems a little. It just seems a little messy as far as like the final product. It does, and it was, and the release of it was interesting too because it came out. It came out yesterday.
It's kind of flopped out, eh? It just like rolled out, I found.
Yeah, it flopped it out. Rihanna's just
with a goo around it. It was like,
yeah, right. With that water from the video kind of drenched on it. But like, it was released yesterday, I think it was, on Rihanna's personal YouTube account, which is just like youtube.com/Rihanna. And then today, a Vivo version came out. And so,
and they took the original version down.
Oh, is it? The Rihanna version is down, too.
It's set to private now. Yeah,
interesting.
Like a few hours ago.
So, like, we'll see this on occasion. Like, Drake will frequently release when a Drake video comes out, he'll frequently put it up on his Vimeo, interestingly enough, for the first day. It happened with Hold On, and it also happened with Started From the Bottom. He released it on his Vimeo first, and then it went on Vivo the next day. You know, Rick Ross will frequently premiere his videos on World Star Hip Hop and then put them on Vivo or put them on the Maybach Music Group YouTube account. So, but like, it's interesting to see it come out on an official YouTube account and then the Vivo account to have that happen. And yeah, this video is, it's just lot of story, a lot of backstory with it, and like just like a lot of issues. But like despite all of that, like, you know, it's was still tremendously popular. You know,
5.8 million views in what, 3 days? That's not bad.
Yeah, a couple of days, not bad. But yeah, definitely lots of interesting stories. But like, I'm all for Rihanna with like no clothes on. Like, I vote for that any day.
So, speaking of no clothes on, I think we should talk about the number one video of the week, which is also, actually it's only October 3rd, but it's in line to be the number one video of the month. Why did I say that? It's October 3rd. I was just on the month page, and it just had it at the top, so I put that in there. So this is Work Bitch by Britney Spears, directed by Ben Moore. And so I have, you know, there's two sides of every video. There's the actual track, and then there's the video. I think this track is just complete bullshit. I couldn't, like, that in your post about it, that you wrote about the new release post, it definitely, like, it has that, like, it's going to be, like, a workout song. I actually put it on while I was running, and I was like, oh, here we go. Like,
it got you pumped, right?
It got me pumped a little bit. But I feel like for this kind of song, this is very similar to the Scream and Shout song, I think, in like the kind of, like, the content and the presentation, but without Will.i.am or some sort of other, like, tempering influence. There's just too much Britney Spears, and it kind of gets
without a chorus, right? Like, without a, like, a hook, it doesn't have a, you know, a song, like, a sung part. It's just,
yeah, it's just, it's weird.
She's English.
She's a Brit. Yeah, again, that happens. I think
it's so funny. Is it, but like, can we compare when Britney Spears does that to like when Eminem does the accent that he does sometimes? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, we can do that. Let's get a chart going.
Let's do that. It's the same. Let's get a chart going.
But in terms of the actual video, I think Ben Moore did a fantastic job of working with the material. And, you know, he actually did the Scream and Shout video, which I'm a huge fan of. Mm-hmm. And yeah, he did this video, and I thought that in terms of the video, you know, regardless of the track, it was a really big success.
Most ridiculous use of the Beats Pill device.
Guys, gotta go. It was good, actually.
It's so good. It's like,
what happened?
So in this video, like, you know, the Beats Pill speaker that's in every video. So it's like used as like an S&M gag. Like, it's like
strapped around her head. Yeah,
strapped around it into the lady's mouth so she can't speak. It's like a gimp gag.
It's shortly after she whips her. It's right after that part.
Yeah,
there.
It happens. There's like a whole S&M element to this video, and yeah, that's one of the things that's there.
Now, when people saw the original stills from this, because this was one of those videos, you know, now these videos are teased so much, like the Rihanna one, and like the Paris Hilton one that Hannah Lux Davis is directing for, I can't remember the name of it, Party Time or whatever. It's you know, they do these like huge amount of teasers, and a lot of the teasers were like the square white platform in the desert, and it was a lot of comparisons were made to the Spice Girls Say You'll Be There video from, I think, around 1997. Let me see here, 1996, excuse me. But there's definitely some comparisons. When I went back and actually watched the Say You'll Be There video, and it's not that as close as a lot of people say. They're missing the shiny element in it, which was a big element in the original video. But at least people remember that video, I guess.
Yeah, totally. The Spice Girls had some amazing videos. I like loved a lot of the Spice Girl videos because, like, when I was a kid, it's because like they're girls. But I think they're great videos. Those old Spice Girl videos. To Become One is another really great Spice Girls video. But yeah, the teasing of this video is super. It's super interesting. It was a lot of like Instagram teasing, and if this video was just that outdoor platform in the desert, maybe people would have like more arguments. But like, it's not like there were any like elements in that Spice Girls video of like the Spice Girls in the middle of water with sharks swimming around them or anything like that. It's definitely got a lot of unique elements. One thing that's really interesting though, and I think it speaks a lot about the popularity of like who's popular right now, and it's obviously no surprise, but like this video is going to be probably going to come up like 5 million views short of a Mike Will Made It video from last week. And that's just because of Miley Cyrus's involvement. It's not even a Miley Cyrus track. It's a track from a pretty relative unknown guy. Mike Will made it, and he's going to crush, in terms of view count, what Britney Spears is going to put out, who's like arguably like the biggest video star of our generation. So it's just interesting. It is official. Like, despite the fact that it's the most popular video of this week, and it's going to be, you know, probably upwards of 10 million views, it doesn't even come close to what Miley's racking up right now.
Cool. But did that, which did you guys prefer of the big two of Britney and Rihanna's new videos? I can't help comparing them because they stand out in the top three, right? So which did you guys like better?
Oh, by a mile, the Britney Spears one. I definitely agree with Doug about the editing of the Rihanna video. It just, there's no really differentiation, which I think definitely comes through in the editing of kind of building different segments of it. It just all kind of seemed to kind of flow together. I mean, even though the Britney Spears one, I wasn't a big fan of the track. I think that, you know, Ben Moore, like, he really knows how to do this kind of video really, really well. And he brought his A game, we'll say.
Yeah, and another thing about the edit in the Pour It Up video is, like, some of the footage just kind of, like, looks... It doesn't look like... I don't know if it comes from color treating or what. It just doesn't... Some of the footage, it just looks... It has a different look than some of the other footage, like, enough to notice it and to kind of take me out of the kind of space that it's creating, like the world that it's creating. Like, some of the footage just looks different to me, and it's distracting. And so, I personally also am a bigger fan of the Work Bitch video than the Pour It Up video. Yeah, I am.
How about you, Adam?
Yeah, I'm with you as well, Adam. Pretty much the same thing. I don't really like the track at all, though I do find that Ben did a good job of finding some worth, some value to the song. The dancing was the choreography, especially the one part of the shoulder dance, was really good. So, you know, that brought out some of the value of the song, I guess. You could dance to it, right? So
sure. Or work out. I mean, I think...
Or work out.
Yeah, it's perfect for a Zumba class. So
not in my case, but maybe in Adam's case. There's no working out here.
And you guys didn't like the Ooh La La video, which I liked. So,
the Smurfs video.
This is the bringing back of full mom mode over to kind of classic British.
This was she redeemed herself somewhat a lot with this, actually.
I like the video a lot.
I still if you're giving me a choice of what kind of Britney Spears video I would choose to watch and choose to have her make, I'd still choose like the Chris Mars Polero style, tongue in cheek Britney Spears, where it's still got a lot of sex appeal to it, and it's still got like Britney Spears being Britney Spears, but she's like, she's able to kind of have a sense of humor about it, and, you know, almost be a parody of herself in certain areas. And I think that's still the type of Britney Spears video I would prefer to be watching. But I think that the Work Bitch video is very well done, and it's interesting that they didn't like it's Work B star star star. CH. That's how it is on YouTube.
I actually saw today on a streaming service that I use that they have a radio friendly version, and it's just called Work Work. not even Work B star, it's just Work Work. So I don't think there's an edit that'll be like that, just Work Work. Oh, that'd be hilarious. So
today on NPR, like public radio, Terry Gross had to the Peter Gould, and I can't remember the other guy, to the writers/directors of Breaking Bad. And they started an interview with saying bitch like three or four times, but, you know, over the Jesse Pinkman kind of catchphrase thing. It was definitely on the radio, like on public radio. I just don't understand. I think bitch is in it like a definite gray area, but I guess some people took a look at who was going to be, you know, listening to this Britney Spears song and decided to make a judgment call. But anyway.
Well, whoever's responsibility is to make those judgment calls with like Miley Cyrus is not. It's not. They're like, rap about smoking perp. It's fine. Like Britney's bitch, which is like what Britney Spears says.
It's
like,
mini skirt in the radio edit, though.
Oh, really? Smoking mini skirt?
No. Anyway, I was listening to the version. I was like, where's the part where she says perp? But she says I'm in the club with my. It's she talks about a mini skirt. Anyway, let's get off the Britney Spears Rihanna stuff because we have a lot more to talk about.
So the next most popular video, at least on the chart right now, is The Killer's Shot at the Night. But that actually came out last Friday, So that we didn't get to cover it, but that is not going to be one of the top 10 of the week due to the fact that it's not from this week. Mm-hmm. So maybe we push through and talk about Arcade Fire.
Yeah, so a little bit of background on the Arcade Fire thing. We actually had a discussion on Sunday/Monday of whether this would actually go into the database, because if you were anywhere in the U.S. except for Durham, North Carolina, after Saturday Night Live on Saturday, this special came on, and I saw a lot of people like tweeting about it, including Eric Wareheim, but Tim and Eric were big fans of, and he was a part of this, mm-hmm. and it was a half an hour special after Saturday Night Live, and I've been watching Saturday Night Live for a long time. I know, Doug, you have. Adam, are you a Saturday Night Live watcher?
Off and on. It all depends on the current cast, really.
Yeah, I've waned in on it a little bit as well, if I'm being honest. But I've never really seen this. Arcade Fire have been on Saturday Night Live like something like four times in the last 6 years. So mm-hmm. they're like really kind of, and they were in a skit, this past week as well.
And so the way that this worked also at the end of the episode, like Tina Fey, literally, who was the host of SNL, literally said like, stick around for something that Arcade Fire, stick around for some Arcade Fire weirdness. And then like Arcade Fire in the clothes that they're in at the beginning of this Here Comes the Nighttime short film, which is directed by Roman Coppola, they like walk off the stage in the same clothes. Like it kind of leads into another, because the Here Comes the Nighttime video starts with them kind of in a conga line in these clothes, which is how they ended the episode of SNL. So it was definitely tied into that, to the episode of the show, pretty tightly. And then it was full of comedians, which also, including some former SNL cast members like Bill Hader.
Now, if you were in Raleigh, Durham, you would have seen Tina Fey say, stay tuned for the Arcade Fire special, and then it would have cut to a screen that said, this is a paid advertisement, and you would have listened to a man with a headset mic talk about the Bible for half an hour.
Now, did you stick around for a half hour trying to think if it was possibly some kind of really weird thing, and that Arcade Fire
this is really overrated, this tweet's coming.
Yeah, what are they talking about? This is just some man in a purple shirt. But since then, Adam, you've watched it on the internet, right?
Well, I have watched it on the internet, yeah. And so a few things struck me about this. Number one, Arcade Fire, and I think I discussed this a little bit on the blog this week, are such, they're hustlers when it comes to like promoting themselves, and this is mm-hmm. definitely an extension of that. This is so jam-packed with people from like Ben Stiller to Bono to all sorts of celebrities and stuff like that. It's just it was a very weird special, I think, which is kind of apropos for being so late on a Saturday night, Sunday morning. And I really like Arcade Fire. I think their like best era was the suburbs, but I think I can travel down this road with them for this era as well.
Yeah, I'm down with this. I think it's definitely like got some bizarre elements to it. It's strange. I like Arcade.
Sounds like they're going a little bit more into a new wave style with this one. I hear lots of like Talking Heads influence. They've always kind of had that, but they're pushing it a little further with this new material.
Yeah, I prefer Arcade Fire's version of weird, more than MGMT's version of it. Let's say that. and it works. And I'm pretty much, Bono, I could take him or leave him, but pretty much everybody else who makes an appearance in this Arcade Fire special, I would say I'm a fan of. Ben Stiller and Rainn Wilson, Eric Wareheim, Aziz Ansari, Michael Cera. I mean, Zach Galifianakis, all those dudes who made appearances in this video, I think are super funny, and we're all pretty good in this video as well.
And then there's go ahead, Adam.
Yeah, I have a little. I'm actually would like to know a little bit more about how this all got planned and stuff. I noticed one common little thread. Speaking as a Canadian, Michael Cera, who's Canadian, or Arcade Fire, who are Canadian as well. Sarah recently did a promotion for the band Islands. They're another indie rock group, and he directed the promo. It was kind of done as like a mockumentary style thing, and a lot of these comedians, Hader included, they were in that promo as well. And I was just wondering, like, I'm curious about the whole thing, if Sarah didn't have a hand in sort of making this thing happen a little bit too. Just the Canadian indie rock scene. I don't know. He's right into that lately. So this all happened to the same 2 week span too.
And also Michael Cera and Eric Wareheim are both part of the team behind Jash, which is a YouTube kind of comedy network. They also put out a bunch of music videos, one of which we staff picked this week. Michael Cera, Tim and Eric, Reggie Watts, and Sarah Silverman all started that. So, he could be threatened. And they started Jash. The video that came out.
Yeah. And the Islands promo was a Jash thing too. I didn't know of it prior to that though. So yeah, okay.
Yeah, and then so Michael Cera is definitely, you know, everyone kind of pops in, you know, Bono and Ben Stiller are wearing the Arcade Fire masks, and Aziz and Eric are kind of part of like a insert video that's part of it.
For three seconds.
Yeah, but Michael Cera kind of has a more significant role.
He's got that chest thing at the end.
Yeah, yeah, it's interesting. I know. And so it's so you could be right. I don't know for sure. And I don't know. I don't know. I don't really know for sure much of the backstory behind this one. But
let's link to that in the.
I wouldn't be surprised
because I'd like to see that. Because I think there's definitely a link there. I know that probably the Saturday Night Live thing came about, or the ability to do that, because of Arcade Fire's, you know, relationship with Saturday Night Live, and especially with Lorne Michaels. I know they're one of those bands that's like really ingrained in Saturday Night Live.
What do they normally play after SNL? Like, what are they going to play this Saturday? I thought they just played older SNL usually.
It really depends on the affiliate. Affiliates make the decision. Gotcha. So like here, we always have the Bible thing. Every single Saturday.
Yeah, that's a lot. Everybody goes to bed at 12:30. It's just a black screen in Canada.
Nice.
Yeah. Time for bed.
It's got the picture of the Indian they used to play.
Please stand by.
Yeah, the please stand by thing. But like other affiliate, like I've been watching TV over air for quite a while, and like in Boston, I think they used to play something or whatever. We actually get in Durham, we hear an over the air music 24/7 music video channel.
Nice.
Which is weird that it turned in sometimes. It's called like Cool Music or something like that. But they actually play like up to date music videos, so I usually turn that on after.
It's not bad.
But I would like to just to point out that although most of Arcade Fire is Canadian, the Butler brothers, Win Butler and William Butler, I think, are from California.
Oh, hey, how about that?
Born in California, raised in Houston, and then I only know this because I had a researcher for a blog post earlier this week, and then went to Exeter Prep School in Maine, and then went to McGill in Montreal, where they met. Where he met Régine Chassaigne.
And that is the story of Arcade Fire. And
that
then
the story.
And then they met Chris Milk. No, the other stuff happened before that.
And then they make a ridiculously complicated...
complex.
Interactive videos.
They do. Some are good. Some are not so ridiculously complicated. But it's definitely like... So I want to get into a little bit and just touch on it, because you mentioned that we had an internal debate on whether or not we should count this as a music video or not. And I kind of just want to say why we decided to keep it. And I think, you know, it satisfies most of our main requirements for music video. Obviously, the songs were primarily pre-recorded. It is obviously official. Comes from the band and it features the band, and those are the main elements. And then we've also have a few other kind of similar examples of kind of short films that use several songs from an album up on the site. And so those were the main determining factors on why we decided to keep this up. there.
I felt that because it was also clearly a promotional tool and also had a director were two contributing factors to having it in the database too.
Yeah, totally. Those are important elements.
And Roman Coppola.
We didn't mention the director actually. Yeah, wrong. Yeah.
Roman Coppola is typically typically works in film, but occasionally will do things in the music video world as well. And high quality, you know, big stuff like this. It's not like he's not doing any, you know, $5,000 videos.
Big stuff. Big stuff.
Big things. TV stuff. Now, I'm curious how many people watched it on TV on Sunday morning versus how many views it got. On the internet, do you think more than 1 million people watched it that night?
I'm sure, yeah.
Probably.
Well, here's a Variety article I'm pulling over here. Saturday Night Live logs best week one ratings in 3 years, and that would be 6.5 million viewers overall. And a lead-in is really important. So
this was about as lead-in as you get, too. It literally was like, watch this next thing. It's starting right now. And then it started... Like it started before the last show even ended. It's like when Rachel Maddow kicks it to Lawrence O'Donnell.
Yeah, but also remember that a lot of people trail off during the show as well. So
yeah.
I'd say like probably a million-ish.
Yeah, that's a fair guess. So probably equal audience of online views and television views. And I definitely like for me, I didn't even. Like we were playing a really hardcore game of Risk on Saturday night at my bro Steve's house, and SNL was on in the background, and all of a sudden I looked up and I'm like, wait, is Arcade Fire performing a third time? And then I like looked at what time it was and I'm like, is SNL longer? And then like I realized it's like, wait, what is Ben Stiller doing there? Like it kind of like unfolded before me. I wasn't paying enough attention right away to realize what was going on. And then it was really funny. I started tweeting Adam, and I'm like, or I started texting Adam. I'm like, Adam, are you watching this? What's going on? And you're like, I've got this Bible guy on TV. I have no idea what's going on. And so, Durham for the win.
So let's talk a little bit about our favorites because we talked a little bit about the top ones. And Adam, was there one that kind of stood out this week for you that you wanted to talk about?
We're doing like our overall favorites, or are we still hitting the top 10 here?
Overall favorites.
Overall favorites. Now I definitely have one. It was. Let me think here. It was the Cults video.
Yeah.
Today.
Yeah, today, yeah.
Yeah, so that was for High Road. And it's an awesome video, actually, as their videos usually are. So they haven't made a bad video.
It's true, and they work frequently with Isaiah Surrett, who we just interviewed recently for his Cool Song Number 2 video by MGMT. But this one was directed by Hiro Murai, who we've interviewed like 100 times.
100-ish.
And he also makes great videos. Adam and I discussed potentially coming up with a feature on the site that just automatically staff picks Hiro Murai videos when they come out, because I think we've now staff picked 5 in a row for him, maybe even 6. He's good at videos, and this is one.
He's gonna make you a real nice video.
He'll make a video for you. And, what is that? And it's a great one too. This could be my favorite of the week as well. It's a toss.
And it's not like Hiro's like just like dumping videos off the side of a boat or whatever. He's only done 2 in 2013: Hive by Earl Sweatshirt and High Road by Cults. He did a lot more. He did 6 in 2012.
Right. He worked on different stuff this year because then he also did that short film with Donald Glover. A month or so ago, which is promotional for Donald Glover's album, but it's definitely not a music video. But you're right, he's not dumping videos off the side of
He's really good at straddling the mainstream and the more independent stuff too. Like there's not a lot of directors that do it as much as him, and as well he seems to know how to cater to a mainstream audience as well as do really cool stuff that the the indie scene will like. Because he's he's done some Usher videos and B.O.B. and then he's done St. Vincent and like lots of smaller bands too. It's cool.
Right. Like, what did you like about this video, Adam?
Well, I definitely got like a 60s kind of a suspense horror feel from it, like an Alfred Hitchcock kind of a feel to it, being black and white and all kind of the tunnel vision floating objects and stuff. It was just a cool video overall. And I love the song.
Yeah, I wrote the post about this today for our new release posts. And I was really interested in the beginning and the end mirror each other. So there's once you get to the pattern, that's where it mirrors each other, which I thought was interesting. But there's all these kind of like, you know, surrealism, you know, at its core, I think, is about taking objects and then putting them in different contexts or, you know, presenting them differently. So like the classic example of like the melting clocks of Salvador Dali. And this video does a lot of that, of taking, you know, the car, which I think was the BMW, you know, 580i E3 or whatever. We'll put the link in the show notes. I actually did that car research myself. I was proud of that. I found very, very close to the exact car. It's definitely BMW, like 1970s sedan. But you know, they've got the deer head and then the deer head on fire. Same with the car. There's all these different, you know, taking everyday things and then kind of warping them. So you'll see the two members of Cults from above with their shadows being cast long. And it's not really, you know, you have to take a second to realize that's what you're looking at. There's all these, like, you know, like you said, Adam, playing with, you know, the dark and the light and using that really kind of like, you know, horror film-esque, you know, high contrast to do really interesting things. When that tunnel comes at you with the car shot, I mean, it comes at you. It's a really kind of striking visual. And that definitely is, you know, Larkin Semple, Larkin Semple. I'm probably pronouncing that horribly. Is a director of photography we'll link to his page on the site. He's done so many amazing projects, and I think that he definitely had a big hand in this.
Yeah, and most of what he and Hero work very frequently together as well. It's definitely like the one thing I like about most of Hero's videos is that, if you just kind of describe what's happening in the video, like you're not even scratching the surface. You know what I mean? Like there's so much about like the tone that he establishes in the videos and stuff that really is a major part of them. And so, this was definitely either my most favorite or second favorite of the week as well.
But you said second favorite. Is it Home by Bri Bri? Is that your number one?
Yes. No, it's
Wait, hold on. I'm trying to guess your number one.
Okay.
Is it Candy Boy by Trendy?
Nope.
Let me give me three guesses. It's my number one.
Maybe the Mike Quinn one.
No, I love the Mike Quinn one though. The Mike Quinn one, that's also a Jash video. That came through Jash.
Is it? That's cool.
Yeah, Ben Berman, who edited and directed that video. I think he edited. Definitely directed.
Actually, I think I read it. I think Eric tweeted about it, and I wondered what the connection was. So yeah, well, that makes sense.
It goes beyond that. Actually, Ben Berman is from, like, he worked on Tim and Eric Awesome Show, I believe, as an editor and maybe a producer as well. But he's worked on kind of anything that Tim and Eric has done since Awesome Show. Ben Berman has been a part of it, and he's definitely like an employee of Absolutely Productions, and so that's the connection. But Ben Berman does music videos frequently. But yeah, it came out as on the Buh channel. I think it's BUH. Maybe there's two H's, but it's a sub channel of Jash. The way Jash works is it's a multi-channel network. So Sarah Silverman has her own channel. Tim and Eric has their own channel. Then there's like a Jash channel, and then there's a Buh channel where they'll put out some music videos. That's also where like Doug Pound series exists. So I think my favorite it might be High Road, but it also could be Hate or Glory by Gesellstein. I don't know how to say these guys. guest names.
Wait, say that. Try that one again, Doug.
Guest Affelstein. I think it's
Gasafelstein, maybe.
Yeah, that's what I said. I'm breaking up because of Skype. and that's directed by Floor and Manu. I don't know if I said that right either, but I did say.
Yeah, that's good.
And then it's shot by Michael Reagan. I can say that. Shot by Michael Reagan, who we interviewed this week, released an interview with a cinematographer profile with him. Michael Reagan is an extremely prolific director of photography. Shot some of our favorite music videos from this year. So you should check that out, too, if you like this video, which I liked a lot, Hate or Glory. What did you guys think of it?
This one really struck me because of the way it starts out. It doesn't start out with the music. It starts out with this conversation between what is quickly established to be sort of a mentor to a mentee, in a way, sort of like a boss to an employee drug dealer.
Gangsters, right.
Gangster, yeah. It's assumed a drug dealer, though, right? I guess.
I think it's a fair, I mean...
Sure.
I didn't see any drugs, but it seems like they're doing some kind of illegal activity.
Yeah, I mean, where do they get the gold chains?
Oh, definitely, probably drug money. Either that, or they're just rappers we haven't heard of.
They're just selling pirated Miley Cyrus CDs.
That's popular too. Maybe what they're doing is completely legal, and it's none of these prejudice things we're saying here. No, I think so. I think they're probably some kind of riffraff style activity is going on with these guys.
So anyway, it starts off with he's kind of giving them the kind of cliche, like, you came from nothing. I made you, blah, blah, blah. And the guy's disrespecting him, I guess you'd say.
And yeah, then he just pulls up. They're cursing at each other.
Yeah, but the other guy just in the middle of the guy just like telling him, about respecting him and stuff like that, and not really like even like going off on him. He's kind of dressing him down a little bit. Just pulls out a gun and shoots him and takes his gold chain. And that's when the song starts. That's just such a jarring kind of visceral opening to the song, and then it definitely
it's like the way the song starts. It actually sounds like a groan from the guy.
Yeah.
Like, it's really like, it's literally like gunshot. You think it's a groan, and then you realize it's like an element of the song. It's like a really like, yeah, it really catches you when the song starts, for sure.
And then from that kind of like really, opening, like rooted in realism, then it goes on to be something that like immediately enters of like a fantasy realm where he melts down all this gold. And he gets into the gold bathtub, and he comes out, and he's coated in gold. And it's not just gold paint; it's actually like melted gold that has settled on him. And he's like this, kind of like the it's obviously in the realm of like fantasy now, where he's at these parties and stuff like that, and women are like really excited by him because he's coated in gold.
Naturally. We had people who like just saw like us tweet about this video, and they were like, I love it already. I haven't even seen it. Matt Bowman was one of those people. And I think that the reason for that is because Flora and Manu also directed Pursuit by Gus Affelstein, which is another amazing video. Have you guys seen this video? It came out in mid-June.
I have seen it. It's definitely one of my front runners for best of the year. It's awesome.
Adam, you've seen it. It's the video with like
The one shot. Okay, I remember that.
Yeah, it's several shots, but it's like long, really long tracking shots that are obviously several shots laid together. But it's like impossibly long tracking shots. There's some effects and stuff as well, additional effects, but like just like it would be, what would like be like a mile long pullback of the camera if it was true, and like it's a really great video, and it's
like
got
a post-apocalyptic crazy. The track is amazing. It just the video goes with the track so good. I don't think there's a better video this year yet.
Yeah, it's a really great video, and it's got a really great screenshot right now too of a very angry, beautiful woman yelling at it feels like you. And
hey guys,
yeah,
hold on a second. I heard a noise. I need to go investigate.
Uh-oh.
Talk amongst yourselves. Sorry, I'll cut this out. So for anybody listening,
this is any of the live listeners, you're getting a treat because this is just gonna be us for right now. While ASAP Fairholme is investigating what's going on.
I'm worried. I'm not gonna lie.
What's gonna happen?
We need to edit this with the suspenseful kind of the
horror. Right. Just holding on to the low part of a piano, just do it's super scary. He's got a couple of big dogs, big boxer mixes, so they'll get his back if he's got any issues.
All right.
But that's frightening.
Yeah,
that's frightening. How do we say this again? Gustafelstein.
Gustafelstein.
Gustafelstein. Gustafelstein. Yeah, the Pursuit video is great. I actually went to a screening in Los Angeles in August while I was there, a Flux screening at the Hammer Museum, and this was one of the videos that they played, and seeing it on the big screen like that was such a great venue for it, and I think it closed the show too, and those tracking shots are just insane. Even the ones that don't have any visual effects elements to them, and it's just that long tracking shot, especially the one that starts in the lady's butt and goes all the way back, which is where the screenshot it's currently used on the site comes from, is that particular shot right there. And it's just really great video.
All I listened to in high school was industrial music, and I had heard the track prior to the video, and sometimes, which is the case with a lot of these instrumental tracks, I tend to sort of visualize what I think the video might look like, and I had no idea. This is just out of left field. It was the coolest video.
No, it's pretty perfect. It really is. And it's got some of that feel too, because it's in this big warehouse and stuff. Oh, yeah. It's got those industrial elements, like you
definitely
said.
Definitely. Yeah, the track and the video. That's right.
Yeah, it's great.
I'm back.
Totally.
Oh, what did you get the murderer?
Well, I heard something definitely a window opening and then a door opening.
God.
And it turned out to be my wife opening a window Santa. And opening a door.
That makes sense.
But
that
she almost never gets up during after she's gone to bed. So just had Santa. To investigate.
Did you guys watch South Park last night?
No, I heard it was better than the season opener though.
I didn't watch the season opener, but last night it was about I was just kind of watching it in pieces, and Cartman was trying to be a whistleblower, and he infiltrated the NSA, and he's like, how are you able to pay attention to everybody? How are you able to keep tabs on everybody? And they open up this big door, and they just have Santa tied up, beaten and bloody, and it's Santa, and I thought that was really funny. That's it. That's what I'm gonna say.
South Park, what it used to be.
It's still great. I think it's still a great show. Probably one of the best cartoons that are out there.
What was your favorite? Do you pick?
So you guys know my feeling that this was a less than stellar week for music videos, because I can point to just a lot of music videos that I just was disappointed in a way. Keen came out with a video, Higher Than the Sun, that was an animation video, and I feel like certain animation videos are just so well done, and other ones are the ultimate phone-in. Like the Bare Naked Ladies at a certain point in their career, and if they're indicative of a lot of older bands that are settling into a groove, will just go for the animation video because they don't have to be a part of it.
I think it happened with Weird Al a little bit too.
It did, yeah. Although Trapped in the Drive-Thru was really good, but he definitely started to phone it in at one point. I have a blog post about that. And there was all sorts of interesting videos, there was a video called Half the Man by Tibby Frank, which was the first video filmed in infrared. That was an interesting video. And then there's a really funny one, You're the One for Me by Great Good Fine Okay, which was we should talk about later. But the one that actually grew on me, which I was really surprised, was this video called Avant Gardener by Courtney Barnett.
Yeah, it's a good one.
And when I watched it, I was sort of okay. And I kind of moved on. And then I kept kind of returning to it throughout the week. I think it came out on Tuesday. It came out on October 1st. And it was directed by Charlie Ford. And it is basically kind of this tennis match. And the song Avant Gardener is kind of, you know, it starts out, you know, like, I sleep till 11 or something like that or whatever. And it's kind of about, you know, this woman who is, anyway, I'm not going to interpret the lyrics, but she's great kind of lyrics. Like this, what's that?
Great lyrics. She's an awesome lyricist.
She's a fantastic lyricist. Yeah. So I feel like I wouldn't be doing her justice. But the guy who's like officiating the tennis match looks is dressed up like Bob Dylan, like 60s era Bob Dylan, not current era Bob Dylan. Nobody wants that. But no. It's just that the woman giving the delivery, she's been styled to be. I mean, she's wearing like kind of tennis clothes, but they're very like loose fitting, and her hair is like purposely styled. At least I think it's purposely styled to be kind of like she just kind of woke up out of bed, and she has this. Like absolutely no makeup on, and she's just sort of like getting this really deadpan.
That's kind of her thing too. Like that's her image basically. It's kind of that, you know, that folksy kind of, you know.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's just it's cool within the tennis setting and the Bob Dylan thing. It was like a really interesting combination for me. And I really now I look back. You know, I've watched it a few times since, and I really really enjoy this video. Sorry, Adam, I cut you off a little bit there.
No, you didn't. That was good. Yeah.
Are you familiar with Courtney Bennett, Barnett? I'm not really that familiar.
Yeah, I've blogged a few of her tracks now. She had another single that was out earlier this year, and it was also quite good. I might be able to find the title, but probably not. But yeah, she's I believe she's Australian, and she's kind of active on Twitter too. So she's interacted with us somewhat too, and retweeting the posts and. She's an up-and-comer. I think she'll probably get a little bit bigger yet.
Definitely, yeah. The song is really great, and like you mentioned, she's a really fantastic lyricist. So, and Charlie Ford is and let me just check what we have in the database for Charlie Ford because I don't recognize that name. We only have one video for him, but I'd like to see if we can kind of build out his videography if he has anything else.
There were a couple of good videos that came out yesterday. We didn't staff pick them, but I was still a fan. I really liked the Angel Hayes Echelon video, directed by Skinny, shot by Jackson Hunt, featuring our favorite Brooke Candy makes an appearance in Echelon. Gotta love that. As well as a Dog the Bounty Hunter lookalike. Two really important elements in that video. But I think Echelon is like intentionally over the top. Type of video. There's like a bunch of dudes on motorcycles and stuff, and like girls almost comically twerking on trampolines and stuff. And I'm a fan of it. I thought it's a good video. It's not quite it's not quite for me, at least, not on the level of some of Angel Hayes' previous work, especially Working Girls, directed by Brother. But it's still a really great video, and it's definitely a highlight of the week for me. Another decent one was the John Legend All of Me video directed by Nabil. Did you guys watch this one?
I did, and there was so much romance in the air. It's a lot of romance. Great video. It was definitely of the romantic genre.
A little bit of the Marry Me video from last week, obviously, because it Marry Me by what's the guy's name again? Jason
DeLuca.
Yeah, so this video reminds me of that because this video features John Legend and Chrissy Teigen, I think her name is, who's his actual wife, just like in the Marry Me video features
Jordan Sparks,
who is Jason's girlfriend, or I guess, I don't know what, they're with each other. They're together.
Their business, yeah.
Yeah, it's right, exactly. So there's definitely some similarities, some you know, real life romance going on in this video. You know, Nabil definitely knows what he's doing with making a video. It's definitely like not very high concept or anything like that. It's just them kind of being in love in beautiful places as they're beautiful people. But it was another good one. I enjoyed it.
I'm watching this Echelon, It's My Way video with the Dog the Bounty Hunter lookalike.
Yeah.
Wow. I didn't know there was a market for being a Dog the Bounty Hunter lookalike, because he's definitely – I just thought you meant a guy who sort of looked like him. That's a guy who dressed up as Dog the Bounty
Hunter. No, yeah, he's a fake Dog the Bounty Hunter. Right. He's a fake Dog the Bounty Hunter. But it's a good video, and Skinny is good. Jackson Hunt's obviously a really great director of photography, and the video works.
Skinny is great. Yeah, I love this stuff. Yeah,
over the top is his thing, right? Because Bring the Noise, MIA's video was kind of over the top. I think he did a Kesha video too, so obviously that has to be over the top, right? So yeah, that's just, it's the thing.
And is Skinny a duo? I think Skinny's a duo.
Skinny's a duo, yeah.
Yeah, I think Skinny's a duo. I just wanted to mention
real quick, if we had anything to say about the You're the One for Me by Great, Good, Fine, Okay, which was directed by Eric Weiner, and
such a good video.
Has a very simple premise. A attractive woman comes into a park and sits down for a picnic and just proceeds to make a giant, disgusting sandwich throughout the entire video and just piles stuff on it.
It starts out slow. Like, at first, she just makes what looks like a delicious sandwich. Like,
yeah,
just,
I eat like, it after. Like, I eat it at a certain point.
After the, like, as soon as, like, she puts mayo and probably puts a little bit too much mayo for my taste. But, like, at that point, it looks like a very good sandwich. And, like, throughout the video, like, they keep, like, she gently touches the tomatoes and, like, she's, like, pouring things directly into her mouth. She's licking her fingers a lot. There's a lot of close-ups of her mouth and of her legs and stuff like that. Like, they sexualize her the whole video. And they continue to do so even after she's just, like, rubbing Nutella all over herself and stuff like that. And it's cut together with the music really well, too. The song is kind of like it's like a pop song, but, like, the instrumental's kind of got, like, an M83 kind of feel to it, like, kind of like an electronic feel. But it's a pretty catchy song, and, like, she's really good in the video. Eric Weiner also does, like, a great job, like... Like I said, it's cut really well to the music and stuff, and it's like laughing so hard I was at this video, so hard, so good.
I'm trying to find the part where there was a corn in the cob, because there's a corn, like, she just puts a corn in the cob in the sandwich.
yeah, that renders it inedible. Yeah. You can't do anything with that.
It's pretty inedible way before that, because, like, it's so they, like, sexualize her doing it, She's, like, sexy opening up a can of sliced beets. And, like, at that point, it becomes inedible. She's putting sliced beets and chocolate on this, like, salami sandwich. But
she does use kosher salt. We should mention that she's definitely gourmet.
Yeah, right, exactly. But she's breaking it all out. Honey and sprinkles and everything. And it's funny, if you look in the background of the video, like, in the distance, completely out of focus, and a lot of scenes, there are people watching.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like, you can't really tell, but they definitely are. Because it's just, like, this beautiful woman literally just chocolate all over her at a point. So good. So funny. Yeah, really, really hilarious video. A video that should have been hilarious, not quite hilarious. I don't know if you guys... Did you guys watch this Matt Nathanson Kinks shirt video? It's, It's like only at 7,000 views. We didn't staff pick it or anything like that. But it's directed by Bobcat Goldthwait, or whatever his name is. Bobcat.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Which Bobcat has directed, Bobcat directs a lot of films now, and they're typically very dark, dark humor, you know, like Sundance style, dark humor. But he has directed, we have two videos for him in the database. Kink Shirt is one of them. And the other one is, Amy Mann 31 Today. And the Amy Mann video he directed is like a straight comedy video. It features Morgan Murphy, who's a comedian. But this Kink Shirt video is more of like a country video. And there are some like funny elements in it, but it's more of like a little bit more of a traditional country music video as well. And it's just one, I figured you guys didn't watch it. But yeah, Bobcat. Bobcat's the director. I wonder if he gives his stage direction in a weirdo voice.
Well, I think that is his voice, is it not?
No, it's not. I was.
Oh, really?
When I'm forced to, in the car, I listen to a program that I cannot stand and hate with my every fiber of my soul, and that is NPR's Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. And he is actually a relatively recent and frequent panelist on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
And he talks like a regular person.
And he talks like a regular person. You would never recognize it unless you heard them, which they do frequently, introduce him as Bobcat Goldthwait. And on every show, he makes reference to the fact that the fans of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, which, you know, it's a very specific fan base, like, hate him being on the show with a passion. And he gets letters and stuff like that. And I think he's trying to kind of branch out, which is good for him. You know, he's doing country music videos and doing all sorts of different stuff. And he's, like, dropped the voice thing, and he's on, you know, Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, which is definitely, like, a tough gig in terms of, you know, like, audience or acceptance of you. So,
yeah
definitely not his real voice.
His films are, like, critically acclaimed. You know, like, he did one recently with Robin Williams. Like, I can't remember the name of it. But, like, it's a super dark comedy. And it's...
Death is Smoochie?
At Sundance. No, that's not the one. That's like not the 15 one.
15 years ago.
No, right. And I actually like that movie. I don't want to get too far down that path, the Death Smoochie path. But, so it's one of the last movies I remember with Jon Stewart in it. But yeah, I wanted to make sure to bring that video up because it was super interesting to see that he directed it. And there were a few little quirky elements in there, but it's definitely not like a comedy video like his Amy Mann one is. Let's see, is there any other really important ones that we got to make sure to talk about that we can't let a week go by without bringing them up?
Well, I think maybe it might be interesting to the end here to bring up something that's not an actual music video, but just quickly mentioned the whole Sinead O'Connor / Miley Cyrus ongoing thing, because I think in terms of like actual music video news from the week, that was the biggest one, and it happened just today.
Yeah, it's interesting. I didn't read Sinead O'Connor's I didn't read the actual open letter. I just read kind of some excerpts, which is basically like, don't prostitute yourself for the music video industry. Is that kind of the underlining or the music industry, not the music video industry? Don't prostitute yourself.
I thought it was well put, and the intent was good as well. It's actually difficult to, it's because that's pop music, right? And Sinead O'Connor is not in any way, did she ever want to conform to that? So like that letter could be addressed to any pop star, even like Michael Jackson included, or you name it, male or female. So that's kind of what I feel about it. I'm not sure.
Well, I think it's important to point out the reason she wrote the letter in the first place is because Miley Cyrus made reference to Sinead O'Connor specifically in a Rolling Stone interview when she was talking about the Wrecking Ball video. If you'll remember the Nothing Compares to You video, which a lot of people have pointed out is actually not her song, it's Prince's song, but she covered it and I think probably made it a bigger hit. I'm not sure the numbers on that, but I definitely remember the Sinead O'Connor version. You know, the her face being really close up, which is what is almost entirely in the director's cut of the Wrecking Ball video, is apparently, you know, was inspired by Sinead O'Connor, as well as a little bit, you know, the Miley Cyrus hairstyle. Sinead O'Connor's famous for her, you know, her shaved head.
Sure.
But
although a lot of people do that now.
Yeah, that's true. But I mean, I think it was a little more shocking in the late, you know, 80s, early 90s.
Sure.
When Sinead O'Connor was around. But if you have been following, you know, as I have very, very lately, the path of Sinead O'Connor, she has had some major, like, mental health issues. She and public kind of meltdown issues on a very small scale. You know, like, not like
or a large scale. The SNL thing was fairly large scale, right?
Yeah, what is she like?
I'm talking about like 2009 and later.
Oh, that. More recent, okay.
Yeah, like she's had a lot of like difficulties just personally. And, you know, I think she heard this and then wrote the letter. I thought the letter, aside from her spelling pray, they had to, I was sad they had to put a sick in there because she's, spelled pray, P-A-R-A-Y instead of P-R-E-Y. Other than that, I think it was a really kind of eloquent and well put letter. And of course, Miley Cyrus just kind of, she was really kind of mean to Sinead O'Connor on the back end of this. So, you know,
and then on top of that, like, based on those Terry Richardson pictures that came out today, did not listen at all to the advice. And I'm not going to even start about those pictures.
Somebody had a blog post title that referred to Terry Richardson as Uncle Terry. And I think that That is like the most apt. Did you? You know, like Miley Cyrus takes racy pictures with, you know, Uncle Terry Richardson.
Seriously. And do you see like the one, there's the one photo in the set on his website that he's in, like there's a reflection of him and he just looks like, oh man. I mean, I think that's his point and that's the idea and whatever.
Well, I'm going to make a prediction. I think in like 15 years, we're going to be watching whatever version of, you know, Extra Access Hollywood. And that picture is going to be like in a court case. It's going to be like Miley, or not in court case, but we're going to be talking about like Miley Cyrus and what has become of her, you know, whether good or bad. And that picture is going to be the one they'd be like back in 2013. That's the one they're going to use. I don't even know if they're going to use like the Wrecking Ball stuff.
The one of her. I mean, those pictures, man. I mean.
Do you see those, Adam?
I'm looking at them right now.
They're like, with her using like the Arizona iced tea can as like a dick and like just like the clothes that are just like in her vagina, like inside of it, and just complete.
Terry Richardson loves it though. He loves playing that like creepy guy kind of role.
No, definitely. And it's like, whatever, she like clearly, because she continues to work with him and stuff like that, like clearly she's digging it too. It's like what she wants. But
and the thing that kind of just, it makes me angry about the whole Shane O'Connor's letter is not critical of Miley Cyrus at all. It's aimed at the music industry.
It is, yeah.
And by extension, you know, the image that has primarily been propagated through her music videos, which is why we're talking about it on this podcast. But, you know, she's very complimentary of her, you know, her records and saying how, you know, how talented she is and that she doesn't need that image because, you know, her records speak for herself. It's a really complimentary thing. And then Miley it was a really, really cold door. And Sinead O'Connor had a few, like, tweets where she was kind of had a little mini, you know, mental breakdown, and Miley Cyrus took a whole screenshot of it and tweeted it, you know, through her account. So it's things are getting.
When did she do that? She did that today.
Today,
yeah. She compared her to Amanda Bynes or something, I think.
And wait, what did she, when? What the meltdown? When was the meltdown?
Shortly after her response, right? It all happened quickly.
I mean, what the fuck did Sinead O'Connor think would happen though? Like, first of all, like, I don't give a shit what Sinead O'Connor has to say at all. Like, I don't think she's relevant, and I don't think that she deserves to like have been given the publicity that she got for this letter. Like,
she didn't ask for that though. Miley Cyrus referenced her,
right? I understand that, but then she went out and like wrote this thing, and then like people covered it like, what the fuck Sinead O'Connor says matters when it, like, whether or not she's like a, like Miley is using her as like reference material, like it doesn't fucking matter what Sinead O'Connor thinks of Miley Cyrus. Like it doesn't matter. And so like, I don't get it. I don't really get it.
I completely disagree. I think it really, Sinead O'Connor is a classic example of somebody who took like explicitly what a record label and what people wanted her to do. And just turned it on its head, and it cost her a career,
and cost still found sanity. Success though. And never conformed, and still found some degree of success. I think she is relevant. I like that. I like the not conforming and still finding you know, an audience. I like the conforming too, but I just like the big picture, right? I think the letter was well founded. Like there's always a different aspect to everything, right? And I like Miley, and I like what she's doing right now, but there is some truth to the letter too, in a definitely, sense.
Yeah, no, that's not what I'm saying. There could be, and you know, I didn't even read it because I didn't care enough about what Sinead O'Connor had to say. I just oh, Sinead O'Connor says like, don't let the music industry like make a prostitute out of you. But it's who cares what Sinead O'Connor says? Like, there's a million and one people saying the exact same thing to Miley Cyrus. And yes, I know, like, Sinead O'Connor at one time, like, went through this, but she's not culturally relevant today. And so I don't care what she says.
Well, I found the title that I was talking about on Gawker. So much for Sinead's advice. Miley goes topless for Uncle Terry.
That's a good one.
That's a great title. Yeah, that's
like, yeah. I just feel like, and whatever, we talk about Miley on every episode of this fucking thing, whether she has a video, whether she has a video come out or not. But like fucking, let her do her thing. Like, let a week go by where people are just letting Miley be Miley, and like, whatever, like, she's the one like putting out pictures with like Uncle Terry and like, you know, fucking vagina tape, but like, it's still like, she's not the first fucking 20-year-old to do a shitty photo shoot with Terry Richardson. So
I don't know. She's on we should remind everybody, she is both the host and the musical guest of Saturday Night Live this weekend, so we'll be talking about that our next podcast as well.
We will be. Maybe there'll be a half hour special with her afterwards, but
oh god, I hope not.
Yeah, maybe not. There was one recently, right? Didn't there was just like a VH1 or an MTV Miley special, whatever. Sure. I don't care about Shenandoah
Connor. They've been playing, I can't remember what they call it, but Vivo TV has these, they might be called Certified, and it's part of their programming where they'll focus on one artist. And I caught the Miley Cyrus one the other day, and it was just kind of weird because they were mixing in the new stuff, like Wrecking Ball and all the newer videos, in with the like 16-year-old like Miley Cyrus songs. Like, they would actually like alternate them, and it was just like, weird. You can't do that. Like, you can't just play those back to back. It's like weird.
It would be like playing Work Bitch and the Mickey Mouse Club back and like together, like with Britney Spears or
the Smurfs video.
Well, at least like it's her at the same age, but you're right, it's not the same thing, and it's not for the same audiences.
No, it's not.
It's not for the same audiences, but
the Wrecking Ball is for Uncle Terry.
And me. and like, whatever. I think I'm a much bigger fan of Wrecking Ball than I am of those photos from today, though, at least personally. Those
pie and burp.
Those photos are pretty bad.
Pie and burp.
With my jeans on.
I don't know. The thing about Spotify is it depends on how you search.
Yeah, you could sometimes get the clean version. You're right, Spotify. Yeah.
If you go directly to the album, on the album search, you'll get the clean version. But if you go through the artist and then click on the track, then you'll get the explicit version. So
And Miley tweeted together. One more thing about Miley's tweeting. There was iTunes played, like, streamed the Bangers album this week, and then she was all upset because it was the censored version that they streamed, and she tweeted, I can't believe they put the edited version. And then the next tweet was, you wouldn't edit art at a museum, would you?
And with that, I think we leave it at that.
Good, and we kick it to Blurred Lines.
Here we go. Here is another cover of the hit of the century, Blurred Lines by Robin Thicke featuring Pharrell and T.I. We'll see you guys next week here on the Music Video
Podcast. I'm about to get up. Yeah. Woo! Hey, what up, D-So? Hey, hey, hey. What's up, JV? Hey, hey, hey. It's your boy, P. Keezy. Hey, hey, hey. Let's do this, man. Lego.
What you mean if you can't hear what I'm trying to say? If you can't read from the same place?
Maybe I'm going deaf. Maybe I'm going blind. Maybe I'm out of my mind. Okay, now he was close. Tried to domesticate you, but you're an animal. Baby, it's in your nature. Just let me liberate you. You don't need no paper. That man is not your maker. And that's why I'ma take a good girl.
Yeah.
What is the SNL thing when she ripped up the picture of Bill Clinton?
No, it was the Bible.
No, no, it was a. You guys are both wrong. It was
a picture of the Pope.
That's what it was. Sorry, I'm people's public meltdowns. I'm mixing them up. That was Bieber with Bill Clinton, right?
Yeah.
Bill Clinton was president, right, at the time.
Of the Bieber thing?
No, of the Sinead O'Connor thing.
No, no,
do a history podcast.
Hold on. I'm almost sure Bush was president.
Not George W. Bush.
No, senior.
Oh. I thought it was during the Clinton era.
It was like 93, probably, or 94-ish.
Yeah. God, Sinead O'Connor used to be so good-looking.
But she's old now. So what was her meltdown? How was she melting down when Miley...
Just like Twitter, like she's saying she's a psychiatrist and all sorts of ridiculous stuff.
Check it out.
What a fucking idiot.